Hey, InterVarsity alumni. This is After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. This is both an exciting and potentially tricky transition that you're making, and you might feel a little unsure about the coming weeks and months. We're here to provide you with expert advice, practical skills, and plenty of encouragement as you learn how to keep saying yes to Jesus in your new context. This is After Four, and this podcast is for you, alumni. What's up, alumni? Welcome to After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. I'm your host and guide, John Steele. We're continuing our series on vocational transition and hearing from other alumni like you who have made the jump from full-time student to full-time professional life. Today, I'm joined by UNC Wilmington alumnus Kyle Campbell, who spent the better part of a decade working in positions related to finance. And Kyle's going to help provide some insight into his own experience making the transition to full-time work while sharing some of the unique challenges that have come along with navigating a work context that is so laser-focused on money and the bottom line. Whether or not your field of study will result in you stepping into the world of corporate finance, Kyle has some extremely helpful guidance for our relationships with people and money at work. Here's Kyle, and this one's for you, alumni. Hello, Kyle. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Now for you and me, it's welcome back. This is another conversation, different podcast, but another conversation. So great to see you again here, and we're digging into work after graduation. What's it like to make the transition from full-time student to full-time professional, and examining that from a number of different professions and perspectives that our alumni have. So I'm excited to hear some of your perspective, and probably another number of different times we will point people to the other conversation you and I had on InterVarsity World Changers, where we take a deep dive onto some of the topics that we'll touch on today, especially around faith and work and sharing the gospel and what evangelism looks like in a professional context. But we'll get to all of that stuff. But Kyle, just really briefly, because again, people can get to know you on this other episode as well. Really briefly, would you give us just an introduction? Kyle, who are you?
My name is Kyle Campbell. I am, what's my newest title? Vice President of Corporate Development for a large, a wealth integrator. Like most men that I know, I am married to a woman way too good for me, who runs her own private practice. She's a therapist specializing in trauma and faith, and has a book out under HarperCollins and all sorts of wonderful, wonderful stuff. So follow her on Instagram and all sorts of things. Her name is Kabe Campbell. And we have two little boys, and anyone who has one little boy, just imagine having two. I can't fathom having three or four. So I live a very full life, and I am an InterVarsity alumni. I actually have a twin brother who looks just like a skinnier, more attractive, better rested version of me. And he is actually on staff with InterVarsity. That's kind of me in a nutshell.
So we're gonna talk about this work experience that you've had, professional experience in this world of finance, and in your role, you take the lead on like purchasing other business, like your business buying out other businesses.
Yeah, so I work for a finance company, or a company in finance. Essentially, they started as an employee benefits shop, providing employee benefits to a bunch of companies, and then decided, well, people who have employee benefits, they need 401k, like they need financial advisors, they need HR consultants, they need CPAs, they need all sorts of things. So every single type of kind of financial service that you can think of tied to employers and employees, we started buying companies like that. So we buy 20 or 30 a year, and I am the lead over a subset of those companies. So at a company that focuses on health, wealth, finances, I specialize specifically with financial advisors, retirement shops. So I'm like the most finance of the financy people at the financing company. And then I help us buy those businesses and lead those projects to purchase those companies.
Okay. Yes. So you are eating, breathing, wish you were sleeping, finance, like to the nth degree.
Yes.
That is super helpful. Like, I mean, you have experienced the professional world of finance through a number of lenses here. And so I'm grateful on behalf of our alumni who are moving into that sphere, or maybe I'm sure even into the broader business context that there'll be things that can be sort of applied and okay, I can learn from that and tweak it here. And it makes sense in this context as well. But I think that you're going to have some really great insight for us into some of these things. The first thing that I'd like to know is just about the transition itself, going from a student full time into the world of finance full time. What was that transition like for you? And are there ways that the work you're doing in particular flavored what that experience of transition was for you?
Probably similar to many people. I feel like I walked off the stage and life kind of just slapped me right across the face. So it was a big transition for me. Even still, I had been interning at the place that I ended up getting hired, or at least the same parent company. I ended up getting hired into my junior year, into my senior year. And so I would have thought that it would have been less of a transition. But no one's immune. So it was tough. It was tough to sort of navigate the pressure. I am well aware that college can be incredibly stressful, but the flavor is very different when you have rent and you have bills, and very often your first job is going to be a training in poverty, basically. I was not very highly paid. Many people aren't. And, you know, rent just keeps getting more expensive, all these stuff. So the pressure was a lot. And the emotional burdens that I took on were a lot. By the time I ended up going to a therapist a few years into my career, it was very clear that I'd been depressed for a while. Wow. And my entry was a little different, but just the industry of finance, I think it made it uniquely difficult because you come from as quantitative as college is, with a grading system of like, hey, did you get an A or did you get a B? It's pretty clear there. The social aspects of college aren't quantitative. Like, they're very qualitative. So your friends have nothing to do with the grade you got or where you sit in the class rankings. Whereas in at least the sorts of like corporate finance roles that I entered into, that very much affects who your social stratosphere kind of is. And who you can talk to and how you can talk to them, and who can you safely befriend versus not safely befriend, and where do the lines of politics start and stop? The politics of it all was hard for me. And I was a pretty political person back in college. I felt like I was going to do a decent job. So I actually had more of a heads up than most people. And finance was uniquely difficult, I think, for me.
I mean, that's really one of the things that I would like to know about. I mean, I think people don't necessarily go into work a lot of the time thinking about, okay, this is the place where I'm going to build my relation. This is my new relational context. But it, to some degree, it really is. Whether or not it's your best friends that you're working with, it is a relational context. And so what is that like? I mean, it sounds like it's challenging. Why is it in that context that it adds all of those really challenging dynamics where you have to ask a lot more questions about who you can and can't or should and shouldn't befriend?
Yeah, I think a huge piece of it is that the work that you do in finance is not obscured by like the people. And what I mean is, if you're in medicine, you can convince yourself that at the end of the day, what you do is helping and serving people. That may not be true actually when you peel back the layers, but there's layers that you can sit on if you would like to be naive about it, about what the purpose of your role is there. In healthcare and construction and almost everything, you can point to like a product that is serving people in a real way that impacts their lives in a real way. And in finance, very often the layers between what you do and just like the pure dollar sign are very limited. And that drives a sort of, I don't even want to call it cutthroat so much as a directness to the environment that doesn't exist, I think, in a lot of other places, because there's no hiding or obscuring that what you do is trying to produce a dollar, and how you are seen is based off of how many dollars you produced. And you work with money every day, and your interactions with people are only ever seen through the lens of money. So if you're a banker, you're looking at people through their tax returns. You don't spend a ton of time talking to them. You know, like if they come in, you're looking at their accounts, and everyone starts to become a number, at least implicitly. And so it makes it really easy within like within the culture itself to sort of get really reductionist, and everything then sort of becomes political, because there's no, it's hard to be who you are matters a lot in college. Who you are does not matter nearly as much as what you do in corporate finance. And that's true in corporate America, but it's just true to a different degree in finance, because everything is about money. And you can't pretend that it's not, because it's your actual job. So you could be making 30 grand and be a part of a decision where someone gets $1 million. And I can remember 1 year of my career early where I expensed 40 something, $47,000 in travel, meals, taking people out to dinner. My salary was $41,000. And it was just like, what is happening? And then I had to ask the question, okay, well, right now my company does not view me as more valuable than the meals I take people on.
Wow.
And that infiltrates, like I could keep talking, but there's just a level of when everything becomes tied to a dollar, it gets really easy to sort of remove the people aspect from the environment. And you have to work hard to add the people back in to going to work every day, or at least I did. And it's at some point, if you're going into finance, right, you just graduated from wherever you are and you're going into somewhere. I think trying to remember that this is not just a job, or it's a job, sure. It's a mission field. And if it's a mission field, then there are people there for whom the mission is important. The reality is that like those people need whatever God is bringing with you into that space. And it's going to take some intention around like, okay, I want to understand. You have to try to understand these people so that you can, because understanding brings context, and context breeds empathy, and empathy long enough, focused enough, is always going to produce love, right? So it's no surprise to us that an all-knowing God would also be an all-loving God. It's very difficult to be one without the other.
Wow.
But if you don't go into it sort of saying, okay, there are people to be known and there are people to be loved here, and I need to find them, and I need to find in the person in front of me the thing that is worth knowing and the thing that is worth loving, the context that's worth hearing, or else it'll just be a place where you kind of slowly die while probably making some good money. I mean, better to die rich than poor, but you know, hopefully there's some loving and some living in between there.
Absolutely. Kyle, you're already taking us in this direction. So I'm just going to follow you. What does it look like to partner with Jesus in this space? I mean, I fully believe that Jesus cares about the work that we do, but honestly, like, corporate finance is not one of the things that comes to my mind as like, Jesus is really passionate about corporate finance. And obviously he is, because those resources are his resources. Like, none of that exists without him. And so I'm wondering, like, what does it look like to purposefully engage with Jesus in that kind of a context?
Yeah, that's a great question. the text is pretty clear on like Jesus, right? We get a good sense of him. Jesus, I wouldn't say he destroys systems, but he at least upends systems and he redeems people.
Yes.
Not really the other way around, right? So he doesn't redeem systems and kind of destroy people. He destroys systems and redeems people. And so one, when you go into this corporate finance world, unless you feel a specific, I would say, prophetic call, like you prophets out there, listen to the voice of the Lord, shout from the mountaintop that it has to be different. But at least what God gave to me was like, hey, when I came into the world and I saw corrupt systems, I didn't destroy the systems. I redeemed the people, and redeemed people destroy corrupt systems. And specifically, I go to redeem the people within the systems, and their redemption will destroy the corrupt system, right? And so, one, I would say, unless prophetically called, maybe resign yourself in a space of humility that you are not going to fix capitalism in the West. And darn it. And, you know, and at least I think textually, biblically, we could say that if Jesus were here and he were trying to fix capitalism in the West, he wouldn't start with the policies at your financial institution. He would start with the people at your financial institution, right? So one, you have to be very intentional about not letting the system and the money and the embedded injustices distract you from why you're really there. Because it is, as someone who did let it distract me, and for much of my career, I have been promoted 14 times in a 10-year career. I'm 31. I am one of the most successful people I know with certainly at my age. And that's a lot of hard work, sure. It's a lot of the favor of the Lord, obviously. Yeah. But much of that was from this angry drive to get to a high enough place in this organization that I could fix things, that people would listen to me when I said, this is wrong. And I think that was well-meaning, but I spent a lot of time working till 2 a.m, literally I don't even want to say at one point, at several points, at points in my career, literally sleeping under my desk.
Wow.
Having the cleaning people bring me food at 3 a.m. because they're worried about me. Like, who is this kid working at 4 a.m.? Because I was bound, set, and determined. Like, God, you brought me here to bring redemption. They're not going to listen to me until I'm their boss. So let's get to work, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one, I would say, like, try not to be distracted, because it very much is. If God is going to redeem capitalism in the West, it'll be through the people and not through the positional authority alone. And so I would say, in a way that takes a lot of trust in the Holy Spirit and trust in the work that God is trying to do and trust in the belief that he cares more about redeeming the way people manage his resources than you and I do, there has to be a real focus on the people next to you in your cubicle in this cutthroat environment where everyone's sort of in competition. I think that's a lot what it looks like. So it looks like finding ways to understand the people in your office so that you can understand their context, so that you can generate empathy, so that you can learn to love them. And when they feel that, and they will, doors start opening for some reason. Financial doors sometimes, but like the doors of people's hearts. And they start making different decisions than they would have if maybe you weren't in the room.
So this leads me to a place where I would love to ask the question, are there unique openings or challenges to sharing Jesus in this context? The thing is, I know that there are, and you and I have had a pretty interesting conversation, like longer form conversation about that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually going to direct people to, if you would like to hear some really interesting stories about engaging people personally with Jesus in this context, there's a link in the show notes to listen to the InterVarsity World Changers episode that Kyle and I did together, where he has some really phenomenal stories and very humble, real, I'm not perfect at this, but here are some of the opportunities that the Lord has provided. So I'll let that episode sort of speak to that question. People can look at it there. The other direction that I would like for us to go instead then is to think about kingdom building. It would seem to me that in this context, as with every context, every professional place that you might set your foot, there are probably unique temptations or where it feels particularly overwhelming or there's a very strong draw to build your kingdom instead of the kingdom of Jesus in that space. Like, where do you see that at play in the time that you've spent in this career up to this point?
I think those areas are probably both obvious and insidious. I would say one, money, right? Money is, it's, everyone wants money. Everyone needs money. Money's a good thing. What we do with money can be bad, right? We all know that. But when you see as much as you are privileged and maybe sometimes burdened to see in finance, you don't have to smoke to like end up with lung cancer if you live in a house full of smokers.
Yeah.
Right. So like you don't have to be directly sort of imbibing these really insidious Wolf of Wall Street-esque finance cultural things to still be in the room, and the smoke is in the room and it's just getting into you. Mm-hmm. And this idea of tying your direct value to the amount of money you make is a, it's an American, it's a Western conception. It's a universal conception for sure. And a struggle. I think it is unique in finance because it is so transparent in many ways. It's very easy to start chasing whatever's going to make you more money because it's always tied to how valuable you are in a very real way. And when you ask for more money, it's not like, oh, well, we want you to grow in X way. It's normally produce more.
Yeah.
And it can become really, really normal, even though it's not. Like, it can become normalized within your own world, even though it's not really. And then you take that out of your corporate environment into, you know, your family and your friends and all of that.
For all of us, I think, except for maybe those who are particularly gifted by the generosity of God, I don't know, that money seems very intimately tied to the status of our heart, the way that we think about and use money, like in just standard whatever other profession we're talking about. And now you're talking about to the like maximum degree because your whole job is related to finance, money, how much are we producing, how much are we saving, and climbing the ladder in that sense, that it just seems like it would multiply that mindset to a really difficult to handle in a healthy way degree. Kyle, there are 100 other things that we could talk about here in this context. And again, we have talked about a number of other things in our other episode on InterVarsity World Changers. But if you could give one final piece of advice to an alum who is either about to graduate or who's in that first year post-graduation, who is stepping into finance or another kind of high stakes corporate structure of some kind, what advice would you give to that person?
I would give the advice that my father gave me, right? I was nervous. I was a nervous wreck. I had to go present to a room. It was 17 people and they were all millionaires, and I had to go give a presentation. I was 21 and I'm like, what the heck? What am I doing? And my dad, great man that he is, he said, son, remember, no one gets to be God but God.
Mm.
And you need to, you know, on a daily basis, you're working with all these people, you're doing all these things, resist the urge to let anyone be God but God. Resist the urge to be intimidated as if people have control over your life. They don't. And resist the urge to believe that your future is in someone else's hands. It's not. Right. And it was a simple phrase, but it sticks with me to these days when I get anxious. I still get nervous. You know, you would think by now I'd be like, oh man, I've done all this stuff. I'll be in random weekly meetings like, okay, what am I gonna say? What am I gonna do? Where's my checklist? You know, and then I have to tell, okay, chill out. No one gets to be God but God. When I look up, I find myself in right standing. No matter, I act like Adam, but apparently I look like Jesus. Not sure how that calculus works out, but the way he sees me is different. And that can sound cliche, but it's the best advice I can give, because the world will try to convince you because of their proximity to you, because of their access to you, the way that they can reach out and touch you. They'll try to convince you that they are God, that they are the ones who control your waking up and your coming and your going, that they're the ones that control whether you make it to work or don't, or all these different things. And they don't. If I could scream without blowing people's ears out, they don't. So no one gets to be God, but God. And if you go into it prayerfully, circumspectfully, and also courageously, it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
I think you're going to find that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And there's a whole culture and whole ecosystem of people who Christians have written off as not worth our time to love, to see as real people with real problems, regardless of the money. So that's a long answer to a short question, but that's the answer I got.
That's fantastic. In a world where there are so many things claiming to be God, or even pointing to you and saying, like, you can be God. You can be your own God.
You're
here.
Pretty
Why
good
not?
At this.
Yeah, exactly. To have that reminder, that humbling but also emboldening reminder of, man, nobody holds my future in their hands. I mean, sure, somebody might have the power to fire me, but that power has only been given to them by the one with ultimate power. That is great advice. Whether you're stepping into the world of finance or not, that is advice that we can all keep in our back pocket moving forward. Kyle, thank you so much for giving some extra time to sit and talk about these things. This has been a real joy. Thank you so much for giving time, investing in InterVarsity alumni this way, in particular, those going into the world of finance, and really giving us some great stuff to think about as we step into that context. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. It is a genuine joy and a pleasure. And I'll ask them to put my LinkedIn in the show notes. If you want to hit me up on LinkedIn, hit me up, man. If you need a job or something and you're excellent or engaging, pick one, you know, or be both. If you're both incredible, but at least be one or the other, I got you. But I would love to, if you ever are running into a situation or you need prayer from someone in the context or whatever, I make it my business to try to find young folks. Gosh, young folks. I'm 31. I'm not that old. Younger folks in the industry who I can be there for. So hit me up. We're brothers and sisters in Christ.
This could totally be my own bias talking, so take this with a grain of salt. But more than any other conversation that we've had so far or will have in this series, Kyle's episode seems to serve as a humble warning. Nothing that should cause fear or a reconsideration of your professional endeavors. I don't mean that. But I do mean, if you're stepping into the world of finance or another position where money plays a central role in the work that you do, or honestly, if you're going to be receiving a paycheck at all, you would do well to be mindful of the ways that you are being shaped by and in relation to money. Money can so quickly become the primary motivator for what we do. It can become the thing that defines who we are, and money can even become the measurement for whether or not someone is worth associating with. Don't be afraid of it, and don't demonize it, but also don't let your discipleship around money go unchecked as you continue to navigate the working world. Whether you stand to make a lot of it or just work with a lot of it in your job, money is extremely influential. How will you be preparing yourself to engage with that influence in a way that puts Jesus at the center of your relationship with money and with people? Kyle, thanks so much for joining me again for these alumni podcasts. I have really enjoyed chatting with you and getting to hear your story. If any of you would like to hear more from Kyle, follow the link in the show notes to our other alumni podcast, InterVarsity World Changers. You can check out Kyle's story of evangelism with his coworkers in the world of corporate finance. Really great stuff, along with other stories from alumni just like you on that podcast. then be sure to come back next week to meet Lydia Goldie. Lydia is a Juilliard alumna who's learning how to navigate life after graduation as an artist and all the extra work that goes into pursuing your dreams and using your talents while working other jobs to pay the bills. Thanks for tuning in, and I will see you in the after, alumni. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, alumni. If there was anything that you learned, really enjoyed, or that encouraged you from today's episode, would you send us a DM or tag us in a story? We'd love to hear about it. You can find us at After4Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, take just a second to unlock your phone and subscribe to the podcast. If your platform lets you, leave us a rating and a review. And if you like what we're doing here, share us with your InterVarsity or other post-graduation friends. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you in the after, alumni.